of your five senses, where patients hear voices, they see things that aren't really there, they smell things that aren't really there. And cognitive deficits with patients with schizophrenia affects their attention and their memory. So these are the overall symptoms of the illness. Schizophrenia, according to the DSM-IV, can be broken up into different subtypes. Paranoid type is predominantly having ideas of persecution, that people are after you. Disorganized schizophrenia is those who usually can't talk in coherent sentences, have a lot of attention problems. Catatonic schizophrenia are those who either stand in a particular position for a long period of time. And then undifferentiated are those that we can't really put in one of these categories, but do have hallucinations and delusions. Know that I could probably spend the next hour talking about schizophrenia, so this is just a really brief overview of the illness. Different factors affect patients with schizophrenia with their work and school and interpersonal relationships. That includes their symptoms of their illness themselves, their positive symptoms, their delusions, hallucinations, their negative symptoms, which is being very flat and apathetic, not being motivated to go out. A lot of people think negative symptoms is depression. These patients are not technically sad when they have negative symptoms. They just don't have motivation. And all these different factors play into their kind of social dysfunction in society. And what I'm really going to concentrate on today is under comorbid conditions, chronic medical conditions is where I'm going to highlight today. The lifetime risk of developing schizophrenia is pretty much equal between men and women. The differences lie in when the age of onset. Males have a much earlier age of onset, usually in their late teens, early 20s. And women have a much later onset, late 20s, early 30s is usually average. And because it's in the literature, it states that because of these differences in age of onset, men have a poor course of illness. And that's usually because at the age of 18, we haven't started college yet. We usually don't have tremendous job skills. We don't have a lot of income. And so being hit with such a traumatic illness, such as schizophrenia at such an earlier age, really sets the course for this person's life. And because a woman has a later age of onset, it gives her the opportunity to develop more social networks, possibly have higher levels of education, and probably better employment skills as well. You do see a difference, though, after a woman goes through menopause. There is a thing called the estrogen hypothesis, where estrogen protects us. And after menopause, we do start mirroring men with our hallucinations and delusions. Schizophrenia is known to also be associated with psychiatric comorbidities, such as substance abuse is very high in this population. Depression and suicide is also high in this population. One of the myths is that patients with schizophrenia are more aggressive and violent than the general population, and that is indeed a myth, except when substance abuse is involved. When patients do have substance abuse problems, they tend to be more violent. And obsessive-compulsive disorder is also a comorbid psychiatric condition in this population. Medical comorbidity, which is what I'm most interested in, really accounts for 60% of premature deaths in this population, and that doesn't account for suicide. And patients with schizophrenia are really at increased risk for illnesses such as coronary heart disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, HIV, hepatitis C, and diabetes mellitus, which is another word for type 2 diabetes. So patients with schizophrenia are at about twofold risk of dying from coronary heart disease when you compare them to the general population. And people have hypothesized that this is probably due to the metabolic syndrome. And the metabolic syndrome, according to the American Heart Association, is the presence of three or more of the following. Elevated waist circumference, which is really just the measurement of your waist, and it's a measure of abdominal fat. It's a better predictor than BMI. Elevated triglycerides, reduced HDL, which is what we call our good cholesterol. The more you have it, the better it is for you. Elevated blood pressure and elevated fasting glucose. So having three or more of the following really puts you at risk for developing coronary heart disease. And our patients meet criteria for this extensively. Framingham Heart Study was a major study done in Framingham, Massachusetts, started, I think, back in 1948 with a cohort of 5,000 people. And it was meant to really track people who were free from heart disease and track them for a long period of time to see what risk factors contribute to cardiovascular disease. The Framingham Heart Study is currently still happening, and right now they're on the grandchildren of that first cohort that happened in 1948. And out of this study, I mean, lots of data came out of this study and currently still is, but they developed in 1991 what's called the Framingham Coronary Prediction Algorithm, which basically provides you your risk for developing coronary heart disease in 10 years. So what is my risk for developing heart disease 10 years from now? And they have developed separate score sheets for men and women, and they use factors such as age, your total cholesterol, your HDL cholesterol, your blood pressure, do you smoke, and do you have type 2 diabetes. And also you are able to calculate relative risk for cardiovascular disease by taking your risk and dividing it by someone of your gender, of your same age group that has low risk. So what we did is we wanted to examine if there were any gender differences in coronary heart disease in patients in our population who they were non-diabetic, had chronic schizophrenia, and we used the Framingham Heart Algorithm. This data was collected from a parent study, a larger study that was funded by NARSAT and Stanley Medical Research Institute, and we only used baseline data for the present analysis. In the parent study, which is just a pilot study, we had 104 patients enrolled, but for the current analysis, we only used 86, because we wanted everyone who had all those predictors from Framingham, so the total cholesterol, the smoking status. In this parent study, we collected a lot of data on nutrition and fasting labs, so we did have all that data to plug into the Framingham Heart Algorithm. We ran basic descriptive statistics, and we did calculate for each subject their estimated 10-year coronary heart disease risk using that Framingham algorithm. And you can actually go online, and they actually encourage your doctors to use it for you. And so it's a widely available Framingham algorithm that you can plug in your own values and actually calculate your own risk for developing heart disease. And then we also calculated each person's relative risk as well using Framingham. And we just did a basic one-way ANOVA analysis to see if there was any gender differences in coronary heart disease risk. Busy table. Basic demographics, we only had 22 females in our sample, 64 males. Their age was about the same, but I wanted to point out age of onset. Women's age of onset average was 30 years, 0.47, males was 21.59. Consistent with the research literature that men have a much earlier age of onset than women. Also, men's systolic blood pressure was higher in our sample, and also really importantly, the HDL, which is our good cholesterol, women had higher good cholesterol than men. And also, our men in our population smoked a lot more than our women in our population. In the ANOVA analysis, when you're calculating, this is the risk of developing cardiovascular disease in 10 years. Men were statistically significantly a lot higher in their risk for developing 10 years. So men with schizophrenia in our sample compared to women with schizophrenia in our sample. When we did the one-way ANOVAs for the relative risk as well, men again were higher. Their relative risk of having CHD was 1.99 versus females, which was 1.16, and that was also significant. support in their family? Are they seeing primary care doctor more than the males in our population? And these are all different things that we need to consider. This was a cross-sectional study, and one of the limitations to Framingham is that their algorithm was derived from an almost all Caucasian population. And although our population in our sample was also predominantly Caucasian, it's hard to generalize to other race and ethnicities. And also, Framingham doesn't account for severe mental illness in its algorithm, and I think that's a huge limitation because having a severe mental illness really puts you at a disadvantage for major physical comorbidities. And so, I would like to see maybe an algorithm developed for patients with severe mental illness. Now, the literature talks about how diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is extremely potent risk factor for women in the general population. Our sample was non-diabetic, so we don't know if we had patients with diabetes in our sample, would those rates have changed? Would women be higher than men? Because our entire population was non-diabetic. So something to consider for future research as well. Overall, this patient population is extremely underserved. And so, currently, I believe that more research needs to be done on what particularly puts these patients at risk. It's one thing to say that, high cholesterol and smoking put you at risk. But what about this patient population? Can we intervene to get them to stop smoking, to get them to eat better? And currently, the entry point for patients with schizophrenia is their psychiatrist. And most of these patients do not see primary care services. And so a lot of these risk factors are not diagnosed in time. And so it's been suggested that really mental health care providers do basic primary care for patients with severe mental illness because they are the entry point into the system. And I think that's it. And these are the people I'd like to acknowledge. Questions? Yes. Design. Sort of. Our parent study, the major study, was really trying to understand what puts patients at risk for developing diabetes. And so they wanted patients who were non-diabetic. And then we're looking at different lifestyle factors, antipsychotic medication. So kind of by design. So for this particular population, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. It is a side effect from certain atypical antipsychotic medications, which are the newer agents that have recently come out. The newer agents are great on symptoms of schizophrenia, but then they have a whole host of physical side effects. But also, they've done research on med-free patients who are not taking antipsychotic medication, and they're still at risk. So there is some hypothesis that it's the illness itself that is doing something metabolically. And it's also lifestyle within this population. They tend to be very poor, homeless, and don't get a lot of primary care services. So I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. There is currently, right now, they're actually trying to actually develop new antipsychotic agents that not only help symptoms of schizophrenia, but also deal with the metabolic stuff as well. And then there's several interventions happening in mental health clinics that treat patients to deal with issues other than the antipsychotic medication. But we still have a long way to go. Patients self-identified their own race and ethnicity, and if I can go back, I want to say, and then African-American was also 25.9% of our females were African-American and 18.2% of our males. Where this sample came from is an urban city in Boston, in an urban area in Boston, and we have a large African-American population self-identify. So patients will, you just ask them, what do you identify?